Hey everybody, Mark Ashton here, coming at you once again from the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. And I'm coming at you with Project 44, the March 27th edition. You may need to turn your volume up a little bit. I'm speaking a little bit more quietly so as to not be rude to the people who are around me here in the Pizza Hut booth at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. And our March 27th edition is of 1 Samuel chapter 3 through 7. You guys want to see what I'm looking at right here as I'm doing this accelerator? It's actually kind of comical. So here's the nice people sitting in the booth just around from me. And of course, there's the... oops. Well, you just saw the ceiling, and now you get to see the people at the booth here with Pizza Hut. Anyway, not that anybody really cared about that. But here we go. Today you read 1 Samuel chapters 3 through 7, and I'd like to begin our talk today by thinking with you about the nature of God and His call upon the life of Samuel. And I'm sure you noticed in the very first verse that you read today that we were told that the word of the Lord was rare, and visions were infrequent in the days of Samuel. That alerts us to the fact that Samuel's experience was remarkable, even in his biblical time and day. Just like it would be remarkable for us today to be having someone who heard directly from God in a voice or in the form of a vision. Interestingly, it wasn't really frequent in Moses' day either. Remember, it had been over 400 years since that had happened before Moses. In fact, it's really not that common in any age. God can speak directly to a single individual. He has always been able to do that, and He always will be able to do that. But there's no reason to believe that tomorrow He will not choose to do it again. I mean, that's not the norm. That's not what we're to look for or wait for. We can look for how God speaks to us through His Word, and through prayer, and through godly counsel, and through circumstances. God speaks in all those different ways, and we should be comfortable with Him speaking to us in any one or a combination of those. It's important to note that Samuel positioned his heart in a posture to hear from God. His words, "Speak, for your servant is listening," demonstrated that he was willing and expectant and available to hear from God. Well, how about you? Are you listening for the voice of God in your life? Are you attentive to the Spirit's call? When was the last time that you waited before God and just said, "Speak, for your servant is listening"? If you haven't, you could be missing out on a very special word from the Lord. Notice, too, that Samuel was just a kid. His heart was open to God and unencumbered by all the skepticism and burden that oftentimes accompanies adulthood. Eli believed that God was speaking to him. We should believe that God is likely to speak to children today as well. And if we run across a child who thinks they're hearing from God, let's encourage that in them. Moving on, in just a few chapters that we have probably covered more than 40 years of Israel's history. From the time of Eli's death, on the day that the ark was captured by the Philistines, to the day that it was returned by the Philistines because its presence was literally destroying them, it was about 7 months. Chapter 7 tells us that a short time after the ark came to Beth Shemesh, it was carried by the Levites to Kiriath Jearim, and there it stayed for 20 years. We noted that the plague God sent among the Philistines during the period of time in which they were in possession of the ark may well have been the bubonic plague or the Black Death. That conjecture rests upon the fact that the Philistines sent 5 golden tumors and 5 golden rats along with the guilt offering with the ark. The golden, quote, models were the Philistines' way of acknowledging that the plague carried by rats and resulting in tumors was a judgment upon them by the God of Israel. Sending the ark first to 3 different Philistine cities, all of which experienced the plague, had convinced the Philistines of the connection between the ark and the disease that each city experienced when the ark was in that city. Even so, just to be certain that it wasn't a coincidence, the ark was sent back to Israel, set upon a cart pulled by 2 unguided cows who had recently calved. Now, did you ever wonder what the significance of sending it on a cart with calved cows was? Well, I hope so, because here's what they thought. They thought if the cows actually ignored the sound of their bleeding calf in order to be able to go to a faraway city instead of coming back to their calf, they concluded that they would know for sure that these cows were being guided sovereignly and not accidentally, because they would naturally go back to their calves. And so they believed that God was taking that ark where he wanted it. And of course, the ark went straight back to the people of Israel, and the Philistines realized that this was, in fact, the judgment of God, and this was the right solution. The five Philistine kings apparently followed the cart all the way to Beth Shemesh, watched the sacrifice, and then returned to their cities, and they had confirmed all of their opinions. If you and I had lived in Israel in the days of Samuel, I'm sure that we would have been in total despair of ever seeing the Ark of God again. It had been lost in battle, a battle which had cost 30,000 lives of Israelite soldiers. How will we ever get the Ark back? Their leaders would have asked that question over and over, and the conclusion would always be the same. Held in the fortified cities, protected by the conquering armies, there isn't any way we're getting the Ark back. Then, all of a sudden, they look up from Beth Shemesh, and here comes the Ark, unattended, just a couple of cows pulling it into town. I'm pretty sure that many of the righteous warriors of Israel had spent a lot of time and energy trying to figure out how they could rescue the Ark of God from its desperate plight, and what they discovered is that God's Ark doesn't need rescuing. God is always perfectly capable of doing anything that needs to be done to defend his own glory and honor. He was able to bring back the Ark without any help from the nation of Israel. Those pathetically weak people didn't even have anything to contribute. When God was ready to bring the Ark home, he simply arranged the circumstances to accomplish just that. Now, there's a very important lesson for us here. While God is sometimes pleased to allow us the privilege of being used as his instruments, he never needs us to rescue him or his work. He's quite capable of accomplishing his own purposes anytime he wants, any way he wants. It was apparently 20 years after the terrible defeat of Israel that concluded Eli's life and ministry that God's people once again undertook the fight of the Philistines. This time, under the direct leadership of Samuel, the battle began very differently. Instead of presumption, this time Israel showed great humility, beginning with prayer, fasting, and confession of sin, and of their helplessness and their need for the help of God. Samuel, in his priestly role, offered up the sacrifice, and God answered by sending thunder that threw the enemy into a panic and defeat. In commemoration of the great victory, Samuel set up a stone that he called Ebenezer, which means stone of help, because the Lord helped his people to win the battle. So next time you sing that hymn, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," and come to the phrase, "Here I'll raise my Ebenezer," well, now you know what you're singing about. We have a lot to sing about in serving God, don't we? I pray his blessing on you as you read his word.